Exodus 18, verses 13 through 27.
And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from the morning until the evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, "What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning until the evening?" And Moses said unto his father-in-law, "Because the people come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and do make them know the statutes of God and his law." And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, "The thing that thou doest is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away, O thou and this people that is with thee. For this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice, and I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the cause unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt comprise out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them, to be rulers of thousands, and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons, and it shall be, that every great matter shall be unto thee, but every small matter shall they judge. So it shall be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee." Verse 23?
27.
Okay. "And thou shalt do this thing, and God command thee so, that thou shalt be able to endure, and all his people shall also go to their place in peace." So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law, and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel, and made them heads over the people, and rulers of thousands, and rulers of hundreds, and rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter he judged himself. And Moses led his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land.
Okay, you can sit down. We won't make you stand from morning till evening. So. What? We're glad. Okay. So, Paul told Timothy, "The things which I have taught you, these entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So Moses' father-in-law saw what Moses was doing. He said, "You're going to wear out. These people are going to get tired of waiting on you. You have to pick some men that you can entrust with these responsibilities so that things will go better for you and things will go better for them." So if a leader wants to be effective, he has to be able to find people to help him out. Those underneath him, in a sense, in that way that they're going to answer to him. But he can trust them to make judgments on their own. He doesn't have to stand over them and make sure everything, little thing they do is right. He can trust them to do what's right. And as a leader, we have to be able to do that. Because if you don't, you're going to wear out. Be like Moses. Be able to take advice from maybe your father-in-law. I might have a good father-in-law, so I can listen to his advice. My father-in-law is a pretty good, wise man. But Moses had a good one too. So he said, "I think I'll listen to him." And he did what he said. And that's one thing about a good leader. He can take advice and not say, "Well, I know what I'm doing around here, just mind your own business." But Moses, he said, "I'll listen to that and do that." So we want to know what about these faithful men. All of us are leaders. We may not lead lots of people. He said he went clear down to leaders of 10. Most of you in here have families. Not all of you do. If you have children, you're a leader. If you're a mother, you're a leader. You're going to entrust jobs to your children, probably your oldest. You're going to put him in charge of the others. Many other things that we do. So this is something we can all use. It's not just for people that lead lots of people. We're all leaders of somebody, somewhere. But we're going to look at some of the bigger things and try to work it. So it'll work for everyone. But so he says they need to be faithful men. Paul says, these trust these things to faithful men. So what are faithful men? The first thing they have to do is keep God's commandments. Moses, he was going to be the lawgiver to the people. So the first thing he needs to do is make sure he keeps God's commandments and his own family keeps God's commandments. But he had a little trouble with this. Let's go to Exodus chapter 4, 24 through 26. So now it came about at the lodging place on the way that the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. Then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and threw it at Moses' feet. And she said, "You are indeed a bridegroom of blood to me." So he let him alone. At that time, she said, "You are a bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision." Well, this is kind of a strange story. It took me a long time to make any sense of this, but I think I finally made it make sense. Moses is on his way back to Egypt. He's 80 years old. God has invested 80 years into Moses to get him ready for this job. So he's spent 40 years in the palace of Pharaoh, learning about the government, being educated in all the ways and learning of Egypt. He spent the next 40 years in the wilderness, taking care of sheep, learning about the wilderness, where he's going to spend the next 40 years of his life. So he's prepared now. He wasn't ready 40 years old earlier, but now he is. He has a son named Gershom. He has two, but this is the one in the story. I don't know how soon he got married after he got the meeting, but fairly soon. He met her right away, and it doesn't look like they lost any time getting married, so I'm going to guess he's been married close to 40 years. I don't know how old Gershom is in this story, but I do know one thing. He has another son, so Gershom is well over 8 days old. Right? Everybody follow me? Okay. All right. So God had told Abraham back in Genesis 17, 9 through 14. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 17, 9 through 14. It says, God said further to Abraham, "Now as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout your generations. This is my covenant, which you shall keep between me and you and the descendants after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be the sign of the covenant between me and you. And every male among you who is 8 days old shall be circumcised throughout your generations. A servant who is born in the house or who is bought with money from any foreigner who is not of your descendants, a servant who is born in your house or who is bought with your money shall surely be circumcised. Thus shall my covenant be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. But an uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant." That's what Moses had allowed to happen with his son. He married Zipporah, which was fine. She was, there was no command against marrying a Midianite at this time. And later, some of them did marry. But he didn't keep this commandment to circumcise his son. Zipporah, it wasn't a part of something that God had commanded them, as far as I can tell. Jethro, he was a good man. He was a priest of Midian. He served the same God Moses did. Moses and the leaders of Israel, they participated in sacrifice with Jethro. But Moses allowed this to go on. Zipporah didn't like it. She said, "You're a bridegroom of blood to me." And she threw the foreskin down at his feet. She knew exactly why God wanted to kill Moses. And she knew exactly what to do to make things right. But if you notice, who did God hold responsible? Did he hold Zipporah responsible or Moses? Who is he going to kill? Moses. Even though God had 80 years invested in Moses, God said, you're not keeping my commandment. I've waited as long as I can. You're on your way to lead millions of people, but you haven't done this in your own house. How are you going to lead millions of people if you can't even keep my commandment with leading this nation that knows of this commandment and you haven't done it yourself? So it's important that we lead in our own family before we can lead anywhere else. And God, He'll replace us if we don't lead in our own family. Moses, that was a pretty important position. And God had spent a lot of time on Moses. But He said, if you're not going to do it, we can start with somebody else. Well, we know the rest of the story. God did go ahead and use Moses. And his son was circumcised. God used him. And even though he did this, and Moses went on to be a very good leader, and he was what God wanted and what God needed. So, be a leader in my family. That's one way that we can be a faithful man. And that's one way we can tell if a man is a faithful man, if he's a leader in his family. So, if you don't have a family, can't look at that. God has used men that didn't have a family. Doesn't look like the Apostle Paul had one. Jesus didn't. But if I do have one, I better be leading there first. Paul also tells Timothy, a faithful man that you're going to entrust with, he's not to be a new convert when giving the instructions to elders, or about elders, in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 6. He says, and not a new convert, lest he become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. So not a new convert. We want somebody that's been tested. Somebody that's been around a little while if we're going to entrust him with a lot of responsibility. Take your time. Let's go to Matthew. 1 Timothy 5, verse 22. He says, do not lay hands on anyone too hastily and thus share responsibility for the sins of others. Keep yourself free from sin. But when we entrust responsibility to someone, we're also responsible for what we've entrusted them with. And if we do it hastily, we don't give it some time to be able to know that person and know who they are, then we could end up with lots of trouble. A man who is just looking for quick promotions or looking for power or who has other problems, if we give it some time, usually we can see those things. But if we get in a hurry, we won't see them. Because people are very smart and you can conceal things for quite a while. But as Moses told them, be sure your sin will find you out. You can't conceal it forever. So we can, if we are careful, not hasty, we can entrust it to a good man, not somebody that has fooled us. We want somebody that has a good reputation. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 7. So he must have a good reputation with those outside the church so that he may not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. So somebody that has a good reputation, not one that's known as a cheat, not one that's known as a liar, not one that's known as being immoral. We want somebody with a good reputation to entrust with what we're going to. A reputation will either help us or hinder us. If you have a good reputation, it'll take us a long way. If you have a bad one, it'll ruin everything you want to do. Also, he says in there, who will be able to teach others also. That's the second thing. We're going to look at two. First one is, you must be faithful The other one, he says, able to teach. We want somebody that is humble. Somebody that's going to be a leader, he has to be humble. Somebody that is arrogant and cocky, I mean, people will follow them, but usually they're going to follow him to their destruction and his too. But God picked Moses. Moses was a humble man. We'll look at that here in a little bit. But we want somebody that is humble. Humility is the opposite of the boastful pride of life. Let's go to 1 John chapter 3, verses 15 and 16. 1 John chapter 3, verses 15 and 16. I didn't want that. I want 2, 15 and 16. Sorry. It says, do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the Father, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. So that last one, the boastful pride of life, that's a very big struggle for a leader. We can usually overcome the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes, but the boastful pride of life is a hard one, and it's easier to conceal. We can make it look like it's we're doing these things for the Lord, and maybe we're just doing it for ourselves. Also, let's look at James chapter 3. This is what comes about when we give in to that boastful pride of life or selfish ambition. James chapter 3, verses 13 through 16. He says, who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and slow lie against the truth. This wisdom is not from above. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, and demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. So selfish ambition or the boastful pride of life, they're close to the same. That brings about their earthly, natural, and demonic. Just brings about a lot of trouble if we have the boastful pride of life. Julius Caesar, everybody know who Julius Caesar is, right? He's the first emperor of Rome. He is a very good example of the boastful pride of life. Now, he did accomplish a lot of good things, and he helped out Rome quite a bit in many ways, but what he wanted was to be the ruler of Rome. He didn't want to be one of three. He didn't want to be one of two. He wanted to be one of one. That was Julius Caesar. And on his way, he had a lot of power. He was sent to be governor of Spain, which he didn't really want, but he decided he would go, and he didn't have enough power to be the emperor yet. So they had to travel through the Alps with his army, and they came to a little village up there in the Alps, and the streets were muddy, and goats were running around in the streets. And one of his men said, boy, I would hate to live in this place. Wouldn't it be awful to live here? And Caesar just turned to him and he said, I'd rather be the first man here. No, I said it wrong. I'd rather be the most important man here than the second in all of Rome. Well, that gives you an idea of the boastful pride of life. He's rather be the first man there than the second in all of Rome. And one day he was reading in his library when he was in Spain, and he just started crying. And his men asked him, what's wrong? He said, well, and he was reading about Alexander the Great. He said, Alexander the Great was king over five nations. I'm not king over one yet, and I'm older than he is at that time. Foolish, but that's the boastful pride of life. Now, none of us are going to be as great as Caesar, I'm pretty sure of that. But we can do it in a little place. Just like Caesar said, I'd rather be the first man here than the second in all of Rome. That's the boastful pride of life. It's a dangerous one. Can cause lots of trouble. It was in the apostles. Mark 10. Let's go there. Mark 10, chapter 35 through 40. Mark 10:35 through 40. He says, James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to him saying, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. And he said to them, What do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, Grant that we may sit in your glory, one on your right and one on your left. But Jesus said to them, You do not know what you are asking for. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? And they said to him, We are able. And Jesus said to them, The cup that I drink you shall drink, and you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit on my right or on my left, this is not mine to give, but it has been prepared, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared. And hearing this, the ten began to feel indignant with James and John. So James and John, they wanted to be one on the right and one on the left. There's the boastful pride of life. Then the other ten, when they heard it, they became indignant. Why did they become indignant with those two? They wanted to be in the same place, right? So if it's in those 12, Jesus, who Jesus handpicked, what can I know that's in me and it's in you? Not the same, right? So it's something we have to be very careful with and watch out for in our own life. And watch out for it if it's somebody we're going to entrust some responsibility to. And this is one reason God chose Moses. Moses was the most humble man in Numbers chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12 and verse 1. It says, Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well? And the Lord heard it. Well, the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses and Aaron and Miriam, You three come out of the tent of meeting. So the three of them came out. Then the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood at the doorway of the tent, and he called Aaron and Miriam. When they had both come forward, he said, Hear now my words, if there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream, not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, even openly and not in dark sayings. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moses? So the anger of the Lord burned against them, and he departed. But when the cloud had withdrawn from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, as white as snow. As Aaron turned toward Miriam, behold, she was leprous. Well, Moses was the most humble man. And looks like to me in his life, he had conquered the boastful pride of life. He loved those people that he was leading. It wasn't because he wanted to be the first man among them. It was because he loved the people and he loved the Lord and he wanted to serve them and be a servant. And we'll look at him a little bit here later, but he did love those people. Moses was a humble man. And if we want to be a leader, we have to be a humble man. Jesus, he's the other man that conquered the boastful pride of life. Satan tested him hard with the boastful pride of life. He said, If you're the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. But Jesus didn't have to prove to Satan who he was or how important he was. He took him to the mountain, showed him all the kingdom of the world, and said, I'll give you all these if you fall down and worship me. Jesus said, You shall worship God alone. So Jesus had that conquered in his life. Jesus was a humble man. So we need that if we're going to be a leader. Humility is very important. Chris was joking last night when he said it'd be Don's fault if the Bears attack somebody because he's the one in charge of this place, right? But if you're going to be a leader, guess what? That's the way it is. If something doesn't go right, it's your fault. When Moses was the leader of Israel, It's his fault they didn't have water. It was his fault they didn't have food. It's his fault if everybody got struck by a plague. It's his fault for everything. But it takes a lot of humility to be one. Even our presidents, I mean, they go through every word they say and try to find whatever they can. Make caricatures of famous people. They're kind of funny to look at, but, you know, I see those ones of Obama. I don't care for Obama, but, I mean, they make him look like a complete fool in some of those caricatures in the one magazine. I got some old ones, National Review. Well, he's got those big ears and the big nose and make his mole on his face big. But if you're going to be a leader, people are going to do that. So you can't get all upset about those things. You have to have some humility. Also, he's able to teach if he loves the people that he is leading. Moses loved those people. Exodus chapter 32, verses 31 and 32. Now this is when Moses was up on the mountain getting the Ten Commandments. Aaron had made the golden calf. And then they were dancing around it. God's ready to get rid of all the people. Exodus chapter 32, 31 and 32 says, "Then Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'Alas, this people has committed a great sin, and they have made a god of gold for themselves. But now if thou wilt, forgive their sin. If not, please blot me out from thy book, which thou hast written.' And the Lord said to Moses, 'Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of the book. But now, go now, lead the people where I told you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I punish, I will punish them for their sin.'" So Moses was willing to trade places with all those people. That's a lot of love. Be willing to give up. God was even willing in Numbers chapter 14. He'd sent the spies into the land of Canaan. They brought back a bad report. God's ready to get rid of all of them again. He says, Numbers 14, verse 11. It says, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'How long will this people spurn me? How long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make them into a nation greater than mightier than they.' But Moses said to the Lord, 'Then the Egyptians will hear of it, for by thy strength thou didst bring up this people from their midst. And they will tell it in the inhabitants of this land, that they have heard that thou, O Lord, art in the midst of this people. For thou, O Lord, art seen eye to eye, while thy cloud stands over them. And thou dost go before them in a pillar of cloud by day, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now if thou dost slay this people as one man, then the nations who have heard of thy fame will say, Because of the Lord could not bring this people into the land which he promised them by oath, therefore he slaughtered them in the wilderness. But now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as thou hast declared. The Lord is slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations. Pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people according to thy greatness of thy loving kindness, just as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt until now. So the Lord said, I have pardoned them according to your word. But indeed, as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord." So Moses, he wasn't going to have God make a great nation out of him. God could have started over with Moses. He had no promise to anybody yet. He promised to make a great nation of Abraham. He could start over with Moses if he wanted. But Moses wasn't going to do that. The last thing you need to, if he's going to be able to teach, he needs to recognize the greatness of his responsibility. In James chapter 3 and verse 1. Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we shall incur a stricter judgment. And then he goes on to talk about our tongue. So God is listening to what I teach. Whether I'm teaching my children, whether I'm teaching a large number of people, and I'm responsible for what I teach and the advice that I give. And God's going to hold me responsible for that. And if I cause a little one to stumble, which can be children, young Christians, it's better that I have a millstone hung around my neck and cast into the sea. So we have to be careful what we teach and who we entrust to teach. But we have to do it. Because if we're going to be a leader, we have to be able to spread out responsibilities like Moses did and entrust the faithful men so that they'll be able to teach.